Today's February 7th, 2024. Current Bitcoin price is $44,535.
Welcome to the BitByte podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not financial advice.
Happy hump day, Rick. Indeed. The downhill slide has begun.
Well, it's an uphill slide for me.
Uphill slide? Why?
Because I'm working this weekend.
Are you?
Slides. Well, my other side gig.
Oh, so you got a side gig coming up this weekend.
Yeah, both nights.
Really? So are you going to be able to go to the game?
Yeah, I'll be able to go to the game. I'll just be tired.
Gotcha. What time is the game at?
It usually starts at 4:30 Mountain Time.
Okay. So you have to leave early or?
Nah.
Oh, so you're going to have Friday and Saturday.
Friday and Saturday. Yeah. Okay. It's going to be a long Friday. I'll tell you that.
Gotcha. Okay. Now I understand. Now I'm on the same page as you.
Good deal.
So real quick to get it out of the way, because I don't want us to forget. So our Bitcoin, we're going to talk about our investment.
Our theoretical investment.
At $44,532, because the price obviously keeps on fluctuating, we would be sitting at $3,941, which is $941.08 in profit. So it's climbing back up again.
Yep. Still under four, but that's pretty nice.
Yeah. I mean, that's not a bad return. We've seen it go through some crazy up and downs. Last night we were talking, and I what did I tell you last night? I was like, I wanted to sell at least a fraction just to buy back in, because we've been bouncing between like that 43 to, 42, kind of going maybe high 41s, just in that range. And I was like, I wanted to sell. And I was like, I knew that if I was feeling that to sell, that means the market was probably not going to do what I thought it was going to do.
It was going to turn upwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you did not sell, correct?
Correct. Oh, yeah. No. I'm too scared to do that. I don't want to give up my position in Bitcoin.
Yeah. I'm kind of hesitant to even sell. It's just for me, it's like, when do I buy in? How many sets am I going to stack,
Yeah. Yeah. Because even now, to get a million sats, it's like, what, $400? $445 right now to get a million sats. So it's impactful, right? Like, that makes a difference. I was having a conversation with some people the other day, and, they didn't say a whole lot, but they're like, I don't know anybody that has a whole Bitcoin. And I think that kind of a trend is going to become more and more common.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, most people in this world don't even own... They own zero Bitcoin right now.
Yeah.
And institutions.
Yeah. Yeah. That's for sure. Oh, and one thing that we didn't have it up on the docket to talk about, but I did want to bring this up because we've talked a little bit about Solana in the past. Did you see what happened to them yesterday?
No, what happened?
So their network actually went down. They were unable to do any transactions. They said, please wait while we restart the network. Like, your funds are safe and all this stuff, but it's like, that right there is my problem with Solana. How can you have a decentralized cryptocurrency if you have to restart the network?
Well, and the fact that you can restart the network?
Yeah.
How decentralized is it really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's kind of crazy thinking about that, especially with XRP's hack.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, so... I don't know. It makes you kind of wonder about, trying to jump on one of these meme coins to make a buck.
Yeah. Well, and I think it was Raul Powell. I think he's been a big proponent of Solana. And I'm just like, I don't know, man. Like, to me, that's sketchy.
I agree.
Because that's super centralized if that's the case.
Yeah, he's kind of bigger on... Well, he's really big on Solana. He likes ETH quite a bit. And then, you know, he says good things about Bitcoin, but his investments, you know, to grow faster is what he was putting in Solana. So
yeah,
that's kind of scary.
Yeah, I just, to me, that's kind of troublesome. But one other thing, first thing we wanted to bring up, actually, because we should have probably mentioned this when we recorded on Sunday, El Salvador had their elections that day.
On the Lord's Day, huh?
On the Lord's Day. And Nayib Bukele was reelected as president of El Salvador.
Not just reelected, but landslide. Not even close.
Yeah, according to this, it looks like 85% of the votes and a minimum of 58 of the 60 deputies in the assembly voted for him. And I don't know exactly how they're set up. I don't know some of those other things. You probably know a little bit more about some of that with El Salvador than what I do, but what's now, your kind of take on that?
Well, I just knew that he's had a really big impact on El Salvador. I mean, we talk about him going to Bitcoin. You know, they did that over a year ago now,
mm-hmm.
getting closer to a year and a half. But really, his big accomplishment, it's not exactly the most libertarian thing, but he basically locked up all their gangsters in this huge supermax prison, and then he's having other gang members go destroy all the, you know, the funeral symbology that's around El Salvador.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of hard to imagine, too, that, you know, just a few years ago, like, what, 10 years ago, I guess, they were the murder capital of the world.
Yeah. And they don't have a very big population.
No, that's why per capita it was insane, because they were just killing. They were like, whenever Mexico was, you know, we know that Mexico has a bad cartel problem, mm-hmm. but they had a murder rate 4 times per capita than what Mexico had.
Jesus. Yeah, you sent me a YouTube video earlier today, and I was just kind of watching some of that and just the massacres that were taking place and the extortion alone.
Yes. The racketeering that the gangs had.
Yeah. I think it's kind of interesting because, and I know we've talked about this on the podcast too, like the humanitarian aspect of the prisoners in El Salvador and all this stuff, but it's like what he was dealing with, I don't know if he had any other choice.
You know, I can't disagree with you. Granted, there probably are some people that are in that prison that don't belong there.
Yeah.
I mean, all they needed really was just some allegations, and they just yanked you and took you out there.
Yeah.
Now, granted, most of those gang members are usually tatted up like crazy, so it'd be kind of easy to tell if they were making it up. You know, they're accusing you mm-hmm. of being a gangster. You know, you don't have tattoos on your forehead and all down your back and all that stuff. That's kind of their markings that they have.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's crazy, and I give him props. I think he's done a lot to turn that country around. I don't know how. I mean, obviously, he dubs himself the coolest dictator in the world, right? Which I think is kind of funny. Like, but what happens in El Salvador when he's no longer in power? That's my big question.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a thing that South America sees, you know, when some leader falls from grace and they get replaced by somebody, some crazy stuff can happen.
Yeah.
Like Pinochet in Chile.
Yeah.
He went out, gave communist helicopter rides out into the ocean, one-way tickets. I mean, I don't necessarily think that's a great thing, but I understand it.
Yeah. Well, and I think, I hate to say it too, but in some ways, like, if you can have a cool dictator, things can go really well.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with that is most authoritarians, you know, once they get that power corrupts them.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll have to keep an eye on him and see how that kind of progresses as time goes on. I do wish him success. I do hope he does well in El Salvador. And I hope that he can instill, you know, kind of what we were talking about earlier, instill a spirit of pride in a way that people want to live, you know, regardless of whether it's him being president or not.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, though. I mean, as far as dictators go, he's been very hard on criminals, but he's been more open. He's more about promoting free markets, hard work,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, all the things that built America that we've kind of forgotten.
Yeah, no, and that's, you're absolutely right. Like, he's very much, he seems like he wants his people to thrive and prosper, and yeah, I'm for it. Totally for it. Next up, so yeah, congratulations, Naeed. Congratulations, El Salvador. I hope you more prosper and success in the coming years. Next thing that we've got here is we saw when the ETFs launched in the United States for Bitcoin, there was a lot of selling pressure that actually came from FTX. And right now there's a court, the U.S. bankruptcy court is hearing a filing from Genesis Global Capital, who is looking to sell nearly $1.4 billion worth of their assets that were held within Grayscale's Bitcoin Trust. So it looks like we may be seeing another round of selling pressure coming off of that. The courts will hear the motion on Thursday, so tomorrow, and we'll see if that happens. I mean, that may temper some of this upward swing that we're seeing in the price momentum right now within the ETF. We did just post another chart about how Grayscale is starting to get back to kind of the zero mark on their outflows. But this would stifle that back up again.
Just rev up them selling engines all over again after it's settled down.
Yeah. And I don't know what would be left after this. I mean, cause as much as they wanted to talk about Mt. Gox and that debacle, I don't even think Mt. Gox is a drop in the bucket anymore without the amount of valuations that Bitcoin has now. I don't think that it really could do much in the way of moving the market. But that'll be kind of interesting to see how that plays out. I'm not opposed to that. I would like to see a little bit cheaper prices. I wanted, as much as I was hoping that we would just go gangbusters once the ETF launched, I would not mind a little bit more of an opportunity to buy the mid-30s. I don't know if that's a little too optimistic.
Yeah, I think that's probably a bit lower than I think it'll go. It wouldn't be surprised if it got in the upper mid-30s.
Yeah. And I would still even take that. Like, even that would be awesome. That would be an awesome buying opportunity. Because, I mean,
I agree.
I have a feeling once we cross a certain threshold, more than likely what that threshold is going to be is once we cross, like, the previous all-time high, we're probably never going to see, like, 30,000 again. We're probably never going to see 40,000 again. Because even if we get a drawdown, more than likely the drawdown will be like to maybe 60, maybe 50. Like if we have a severe sell-off again, like we did in this previous market. But that'll be after a high of like 120 is, you know, kind of what we predicted.
No, I see. I understand it. I mean, it's just hard to tell. I mean, just thinking about where we were in this part of, you know, the last time we were cycling up or starting to go up towards the halving. What was it at? Maybe like 5,000 or 6,000, something like that. Maybe this point, like a month before the halving.
I'm going to have to go back a little bit. Let me take a look.
Well, I'm just thinking that we know that early in the pandemic, when everything crashed, Bitcoin hit about $3,000 Bitcoin.
Yeah.
That's the lowest it's been in years and years and years.
So it looks like right before the halving would have started, it looks like we were around $8,000 mark.
Yeah. How about
Hold on. I got to get further in. Yeah, because the halving, okay, so we're probably actually, no, about 6,000. And that's probably, 6,000. Yeah, that's after the crash from COVID. And then the halving was about to take place. So that's, we're looking at probably right post-halving or right at the halving, right around the $6,000 mark. And then we didn't see the crazy movement.
Let's think about it this way. $6,000 at that time, last time in the cycle, we're never even going to see anything remotely close to that.
No, absolutely. And that's why I say, like, once we cross that, you know, that $69,000 mark, more than likely, like, if we do see a steep drawdown again, like if we do have some sort of a repeat like what we had before, I don't think we'll ever get back down below, you know, maybe 50. Maybe that'll be as low as it goes if we get that kind of a sell-off again, if the cycle repeats.
Yeah, which we don't even know. I mean, it's been doing that cycles, but one of these days, if it becomes kind of the de facto world currency, world reserve currency, I mean, it's never going to draw down again, I don't think. Or at least not during our lifetime.
No, and that's, I mean, you bring up a good point. I mean, we very well could be seeing the end of the four-year cycle as we know it. We may still have one more. We may not. I don't know. It's so hard to tell, especially because now when that type of FOMO starts to happen and now your average everyday investor can buy some of it, whereas that wasn't possible before. I mean, everybody could have bought it before, but they didn't want to have to take the time to figure it out or set up all these different things. But now you've got all those institutional players that are like, huh, well, yeah, I could just buy some of the ETF.
Exactly.
Last topic for today that I wanted to bring up was MicroStrategy. Actually, they had their shareholder meeting last night. They actually missed their earnings report for Q4 for 2023. But Michael Saylor talked about how they did purchase more Bitcoin. They now hold 190,000 Bitcoin under MicroStrategy. That doesn't count what Michael Saylor has on his own. But
yeah,
they also made an announcement that they're going to pivot to being the world's first Bitcoin development company that's publicly traded. I think he's making a buy also to you know, as there's probably been a lot of transfers from MicroStrategy stock into the ETFs because it was kind of a proxy, right? Like you could buy MicroStrategy stock and it was likened to holding Bitcoin.
Yeah. That was one of the legit ways you can get exposure to Bitcoin.
Yep. And I think he's trying to make a play as to what differentiates him from the ETF.
Oh, that makes sense. And you know, they have gone all in on Bitcoin. So, I mean, this is probably the next logical step for him.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And I mean, it's so crazy how within a month, the new nine within the ETFs have nearly amassed as much Bitcoin as what MicroStrategy and Michael Saylor have done in the past 3 years.
Yeah.
Almost 4 years now.
Three and a half, right?
Yeah. I mean, just the moves that Michael Saylor has made and the amount of money and stuff like that he's done to get to 190,000 Bitcoin. Like, and these guys have done it in no time. A month. I think we were approaching a month as of what, tomorrow or the next day? It'll be 1 month exactly.
Yes.
So yeah, feeding frenzy time. And I mean, we're seeing a lot of other, it's interesting because there's been some meetings that have been happening behind the scenes with Gary Gensler and like South Korea. I think there's been some stuff going on with an ETF in Hong Kong for Bitcoin. Because I think we had talked a while back about that Hong Kong was going to open up. They wanted to become the trading center in Europe, or in Asia, for cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin. And it sounds like they're about to, they should be kicking off their ETFs in about a month.
Wow.
So Asia will be back in play again this cycle, which they've controlled the cycles a few times in the past. It used to be, you would see that, and it hasn't happened in a while, but you would see like in the evening hours, like once the United States kind of closed down for the day, you would see Asia just kind of take that ball and run with it. We haven't seen that in a while, so it'll be kind of curious to see now.
Yeah. I've seen some rumors. I don't understand, or I don't want to go too deep into it, but it's something I want to investigate. But some people are saying that the economy in China is kind of tanking and that there's a lot more interest in people kind of getting out of the yuan and going to Bitcoin. But like I said, those are rumors, and economic data here is gaslighting. You think it's bad here, but look at China. I mean,
oh yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, I hear it on, you know, some of the business reports and stuff like that, I think Evergrande is being forced to disband, you know, and that's actually in China, not just the US arm of Evergrande, but in China. And I think their GDP is like gone into a severe slump. So it really hurts.
Wealth is in their homes too.
Yeah, that's So they were doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Apparently, they would offer you gold bars, like if you bought real estate, stuff like that. Like that was their major investment strategy in China. Yeah. Was real estate. And we're starting to see, you know, we've talked about this for the longest time, but it looks like there's some commercial real estate woes that are starting to kind of rear their head in the United States. You know, there's just rumblings right now. But, you know, we've talked about that. Over a year ago, we were talking about that.
Yes, especially as interest rates were rising.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll have to kind of see what plays out. I mean, Jerome Powell, you know, he's still saying, I think he's saying at this point that he's not looking at doing a interest rate reduction until May at the soonest. So we'll see. I mean, if the market can hold up as long as it can. You know, it's funny about the soft landing thing is that there's a lot of things that have to go right for that soft landing to work. And having like multiple war fronts going on right now, that's not going to help. Those are inflation causing machines right there.
Exactly.
So we'll have to see. I mean, we've talked about this. It's the stairs up and then it's the elevator down. And they foresee themselves being able to take the stairs back down. And I don't think that's going to happen.
Now, I just want to point out that Biden has gotten away from using the term Bidenomics.
Smart man. So,
yeah.
Or is he? I don't know. Good question.
I don't know. His handlers are something else. I won't say anything anymore.
Yet,
I just think that, you know, especially if things start popping off, I mean, if things get worse, I mean, that's kind of the path that governments usually take is towards war.
Yeah.
And it's pretty scary what's happening in Iran and with the Houthis and all this other stuff that's happening. It just feels like everything's on edge. Find it kind of interesting that Tucker Carlson's going to go and interview Putin.
Yeah.
And put that out tomorrow. So I don't know. Yeah, 2024 is chaos.
Yeah.
So that's my motto this year.
What was it? Well, last year was uncertainty. Is that what it was?
Uncertainty. Yep.
Yeah. Now it's chaos. Interesting.
Now it's chaos.
Yeah. It's been a crazy first year of 2024 already, or first month of 2024 already. So,
yeah.
For those of you out there, like, this is not financial advice, but if you've been thinking about Bitcoin and you want to get some exposure, now is probably the time to do it. Maybe wait a little bit, but don't wait too long. And at least just get a little bit. If you've got $400, try and get, you know, at least to 1 million Satoshis.
I got to agree. And, you know, we're going to try and work on the Bitcoin basics. And one of the episodes that I want to put on that is just kind of analyzing the cycles. Maybe we'll put some charts together, but that'll be a fun one.
Yeah. Something to look forward to. So we do have our newsletter that is launching. You can sign up for that at www.thebitbytepodcast.com, and it's under sign up. Just go in there. You'll get your free, hardware device, kind of checklist to make sure that if you are going into cold storage, or if you really do want to take that libertarian aspect of it and you want to do your self-custody, you can, and you can do it with a little bit of a handhold, a little bit of a security blink. I don't think that's a bad thing. We also have deals on our website for the Elopal and the Ledger hardware wallets. Those are just things that you can buy that can help you secure your Bitcoin and give you a little bit of feeling of security when you do it. Also,
at the end of the day, if it's not your keys, it's not your crypto.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, a prime example right now is the ETFs. If the government decides tomorrow that they're not going to sell them anymore, guess what? BlackRock could just refund your money if they want to refund your money, or they could just hold on to it and be like, oh, well, we got to wait for the government to decide what they're going to do.
Yeah, and the government decides to confiscate it.
Yep.
It's gone.
Absolutely. They can't take what's in your head. So, I mean, if you can memorize your seed phrase, this is the first time you could literally take all your material wealth to the grave in the past, like, you, hey, somebody found the safe that had all your gold in it. Guess what? They're going to divvy it up to the government or whatever the case may be. This time, if you sold everything, put it all into Bitcoin, you took it to your grave, that's what you did. You just messed over a whole bunch of people, but you have that prerogative now. So, is there anything else you wanted to add, Rick?
I think that's it for today.
All right. Well, thank you again. Please do sign up. And if you do want to get the Elipal or the Ledger, just buy it through our affiliate links. You are buying directly from those providers, and it just helps support the podcast. So thank you all for listening. We will talk to you again soon.
Thank you. Bye.